This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. In Chicago, storms pounding the East Coast cause another delay of headaches, day of headaches, and for airlines and passengers at New Jersey's Newark Airport.
I've slept on the floor. I tried sleeping on those terrible chairs. The carpet, I actually didn't mind the carpet.
CBS's Errol Barnett.
Now, all airlines are impacted, but one of them is blaming the government partly for this chaos. United says the FAA reduced takeoff and landing rates here at Newark over the weekend. The federal agency hasn't responded to that claim, but it says its workers know how to navigate around weather.
FlightAware says total cancellations within, into, or out of the U.S. today are over 1,900, and there are more than 6,500 delays. Texas residents are keeping an eye on the power grid with lingering triple-digit temperatures. CBS's Allison Keyes.
Even though triple-digit temperatures aren't fun for anyone, there's been no official plea from power operators for people to cut down their use of electricity. Energy expert Doug Lewin says.
ERCOT's system is much better suited for the summertime than it is for the winter.
Community leaders are urging people to conserve their power use just in case, as people like Brenda Bird are hoping not to see a return to rolling blackouts. She says.
I think if we all just do our part, then we can at least stay comfortable through this hot Texas heat.
Allison Keyes, CBS News.
In an audio recording obtained by CBS News, former President Trump can be heard showing and discussing what he describes as classified documents with a writer and aides in 2021. A source familiar with the matter confirms to CBS that the Defense Department memo on Iran at the heart of that recording is not part of the willful retention charged in Special Counsel Jack Smith's indictment of the former president. Drifting smoke from Canadian wildfires sparks air quality concerns throughout the Great Lakes region. CBS meteorologist David Parkinson.
Chicago starts to clear a little bit, but we're seeing these fingers of bad air make its way into the Carolinas and also into portions of the D.C. metro area. So I think D.C. and Delaware is going to be having the worst air.
Murder suspect Brian Koberger back in court one day after prosecutors announced plans to seek the death penalty for the stabbings of four University of Idaho students, CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti.
Wearing a suit and tie, a stone-faced Brian Koberger walked into court as his attorneys pushed for more details on the evidence, police training, and the methods used to make its case.
The purpose of discovery is really to prevent an unfair trial.
Court documents recently revealed investigative genetic genealogy was used to track down Koberger. Investigators compared DNA recovered from a knife sheath found at the crime scene to samples submitted by the public for ancestry tests.
This is CBS News.
Find great hires fast with Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring solution makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Watts, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation.
Here's what you need to know in western Wisconsin. Good afternoon, I'm Jimmy Cuska. The air quality is unhealthy for everyone. The Wisconsin DNR says the most significant air quality issues of the year are happening right now in the state. The air quality advisory is for wildfire smoke coming down from Canada, with the heaviest smoke arriving this afternoon and lasting into tomorrow afternoon. The air is unhealthy for everyone, and when air quality is this low, the DNR says people should spend less time outdoors, especially children and those with health concerns. The DHS says that you can wear a KN95 mask to help mitigate some of the issues. The first documented case of West Nile virus in the state has been found in a horse in Dunn County. The health department says the first positive test of the year means there are mosquitoes in the area carrying the disease. The most common symptoms of the virus are mild, such as fever, rash, fatigue, and muscle weakness. The Dunn County Health Department says to use repellent and stay indoors when mosquitoes are most active around dusk and dawn. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Watts, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Watts today, 855-954-1186.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson & Watts, GTWLawyers.com.
look up cheese curds, you'll find this basic definition: wet pieces of curdled milk.
Huh?
Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, so did you guess it takes 10 pounds of milk to make 1 pound of curds? Now we want to know your favorite, and where do you get your squeaky or deep fried curds? Go to our Civic Media Facebook page to share your answers. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
This is 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
Most of that is good news. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I love this quote by Garrett Graff, is his name. He says, speaking as a Watergate historian, there's nowhere on thousands of hours of Nixon's tapes where Nixon makes any comment as clearly illegal and as clearly self-aware as this Trump tape. And look, the reality is Trump knew exactly what he was saying, and it plays right into what I said from the beginning. I don't think he took the documents to sell. I don't think he's that. I just don't. I think it was more about, hey, look what I've got. Look how special I am. It was all about his ego, I believe. And again, look, his defense of, you know, yeah, there was classified stuff, but it was in boxes with my stuff. And of course, my stuff's more important than your stuff. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the perfect tape, I've asked our good friend Chris Hahn to come talk with us. Chris is a syndicated radio host of the Aggressive Progressive podcast. You can check out his website, ChristopherHahn.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Chris, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, anytime, man.
So what do you make of this comment? I mean, you heard the tape, evidently, that's been leaked, where Trump's going through, shuffling papers, going, hey, look what I got.
So, you know, one of these plaques behind me is a law degree that I paid $80,000 for. And I don't think you need one of those to understand that he incriminated himself on that tape in a way that a prosecutor can only dream a defendant would. He showed that he had something he shouldn't have, that he knew that it was classified, and that he could no longer declassify it. Yeah, look, here's my bigger picture, because, you know, even though I went for that law degree, I barely use it other than to point to it once in a while. I'm in politics, and I think in politics, when your opponent does something like that, you beat them up for it. And I don't understand how there are a bunch of mighty midgets in the GOP primary running around, you know, basically not using what they have here. Yep. You've got a stick to beat him with, which, by the way, they've had many sticks to beat him with, which they haven't used. I would beat him with every stick there is. I would beat him with the Stormy Daniels stick every single day. I would beat him with the failed presidency every single day, and stop saying things were good under him, because we all forget about that last year where a million Americans died and the economy collapsed. But I'm sure they would have given Obama a pass if it happened under him. But we're giving him a pass?
Yeah.
No. He was responsible for the country in 2020, and it was the worst year any of us can remember in the history of this country. So, no, they're not going to beat him with this stick either, because they clearly don't want to win. They're all waiting for somebody else to do it, and the only one who's doing it effectively is Chris Christie, but he hasn't risen in the polls.
Not at all. But this should tell you something, though, Chris, because, you know, I've had a lot of the red hats say they don't care. They don't care what the tapes say. They don't care what he's accused of. They don't care. He's their guy. They're bought. They're paid for. They bought the T-shirt. They got the hat. They're invested. And you're never going to change their mind.
And they're not even hearing it, Rick.
I know.
They're not even hearing about these tapes. I do this thing called the Daily Rant. It's on a bunch of stations, many of them conservative stations. It's like the only time they hear the truth all day. And I talked about it all day today. And I said, you better call the show that's on after me and you better ask them about it and find out what they have to say about it, because it's quite frankly ridiculous. I mean, we've already read this, right? It was in the indictment. But then to actually hear him say it, and then, you know, hearing them laughing about Hillary and how she misused things, and here he is waving things around, and then he's calling for a Coke. Can I get a Coke? I mean, it's like, it's just, he's a disgusting person. and if I was, you know, I wish one of them would just, like, consult with me for a day, so I could just give them a few talking points to beat him over the head with. Yeah. You know, this is a party that used to be the party of family values. They're backing a guy who is, you know, nobody's denying that he paid off Stormy Daniels to cover up his sexual affair he had with her while his wife was recovering from giving birth. Nobody's denying that. They're just saying that he shouldn't be charged with it. Right? Nobody's saying he didn't do it.
But here's
the thing,
Chris.
Admit he did it. He admits he did it.
Of course he did.
So I don't understand why that, like, you know, how is that not an issue with these evangelical voters? How is this, you know, national security threat not an issue with the party of law and order and the party of national security, putting our soldiers at risk, putting our intelligence community at risk, putting people, quite frankly, just disregarding the work of public servants who have given their life to their country? How is that not the only thing these guys are talking about?
Because they cares about care. Chris, this is they
white
don't
paper
care
for how he's going to change the economy. Nobody can. Some of them care.
No.
And at some point,
I can't believe that.
But this is the problem. The problem with the GOP is they don't buy the unelectability argument, because they have convinced themselves that the guy won. Their delusion is their downfall.
Right.
By the way, that's a nice one for your Twitter people.
Make
sure. I just came up with that. Their delusion. This is the live Rick Smith exclusive new Chris Hahn soundbite, which will be used on News Nation a million times between now and the time Trump is out of the race. Their delusion is their downfall. Sorry.
No, I mean, that's the reality. And the reality is when all the cruel things they do, that's the point.
Right.
It's who they are. And look, you just had this Faith and Freedom Coalition powwow over the weekend where they threw their undying love at Trump, booed Chris Christie, and even Pence. You would think in that environment, Pence would be the guy that they'd be behind.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I'll tell you, man. So I grew up in the church. I grew up in the evangelical church. And my mother used to always say to me, you know, there's a line in the Bible, you will judge them by their fruit. And my mother used to interpret that as you will judge them by the company they keep. And the company that this man kept, you know, let's not even talk about, you know, what people do for a living. We could just talk about Jeffrey Epstein, who the man partied with, and, you know, there's plenty of video and photos of him partying with Jeffrey Epstein.
How does he get a pass in that?
How do you get a pass on that? Your party wants to call Democrats, you know, groomers, and here's a guy who was convicted of grooming, you know, and Trump partied with him lots of times.
And not only that, I mean, you know, Trump even owned the Miss Teen USA pageant, and there's tapes out there of him talking about walking into their dressing room when they're naked.
I mean, it's
checking out the talent. I don't know how you just let that
They are not Christians. They are Christo nationalists, and they don't care about the word of God. They don't care about their faith. They care about power, And I, again, I grew up in it.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in that church, and I, you know, I left it, long since left it. But, you know, I read it. I read that Bible a lot, and I knew a lot of people there who really believed in it. And back in the 90s, when I was supporting Bill Clinton and taking crap for it, as a young man, as a, you know, teenager in my early 20s, you know, I look at those same people now, and those same people who gave me, you know, a lot of trouble for backing Bill Clinton, going and working when I was 19 years old, I went and worked at the Democratic National Convention here in New York City. And I took a lot of heat for it. You know, my mother didn't talk to me for a while. So, you know, just to see these people right now, same people backing this guy who clearly is levels of magnitude worse than anybody that has ever served in the office of the president before, on his actions, on his deeds. And I'm not giving Clinton a pass for the things he did. Not anymore. I used to. I'm not anymore.
No, never did.
But to see, you know, these people who I respected and who I thought were standing on their virtue, standing on their morals, standing for what they believed in. They don't believe in anything, and they shouldn't be trusted anymore. They get no pass for being blinded by the fact that this guy overturned Roe for them.
Now, I got to get your thought on the most recent post over at the Truth Social. Trump tweeted or socialed out, could somebody please explain to the deranged Trump-hating Jack Smith, his family and his friends, that as president of the United States, I come under this act. I'm looking at this, and do you read this the way I do?
Was he talking about the Presidential Records Act?
Yeah, the Presidential Records Act, affirmed by the Clinton Sox case.
Yeah.
Not by this psycho's fantasy. But this phrase, you know, please explain to the deranged Trump-hating Jack Smith, his family and his friends.
Right.
That, to me, that I don't know, you're the lawyer. That seems like not just a veiled threat. That seems like a call to action. To me.
Yeah, that's a threaty. It's a threat. And, you know, we'll have to see how long that this judge is allowed to stay on this case. By the way, I wasn't blown away by her ruling yesterday. I didn't think it was wrong. Actually, I thought it was right. I want more openness. I want to know what's going on. And if you're going to give a list of witnesses and you're going to do it under seal, then, you know, you're bringing it into court. You know, things in court should be public. You don't seal those things. You can actually deliver those to the defendant, and the defendant can choose what to do with it if they want. The seal, I don't get that request. But we'll see how she deals with things like this. If they bring, like, if I was Jack Smith, I'd be in court tomorrow, asking for a gag order, asking for, might even ask for him to be held for this, or an increase in his bond. If there is a bond.
But I got to tell you, from my perspective, and again, you're the lawyer here, from my perspective, you know, my grandfather always said, you've got the right to remain silent. Use it.
Yeah.
And use it often. I want him out here saying all this crazy stuff because, you know, this seems like evidence.
It is evidence.
This seems like the more they run their mouth, he doesn't have to testify. I got everything he's put on Truth Social.
The first thing lawyers tell you when you're under indictment is shut up. Don't talk anymore. Stop talking, right? It the more you talk, the bigger the hole you will dig. And, you know, forget about the admission on tape about the documents. He admitted on Fox News that he had some documents and hadn't given them back. There's, you know, every time he opens his mouth, he gets himself into a deeper hole. And yet somehow nobody wants to use it against him other than Democrats and Chris Christie and Asa Hutchinson, who nobody ever heard of outside of where was he? Mississippi. I don't know what state he was governor of. Arkansas. I knew he was one of those. Right. He's Asa Hutchinson, who says it very calmly and gentlemanly, you know, like all Southerners, everything they say sounds nice, even if it's horrible. So it's not working. Chris Christie, you know, it fits when he's doing it. That New Jersey accent really helps put the edge on the attack.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Chris Hahn, syndicated radio host and host of the Aggressive Progressive Podcast. You can find that wherever you find your favorite podcast. Also, you can check out his website, ChristopherHahn.com. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Now, in the last bit here, I want to get your thoughts because you, obviously you're the lawyer and you've dealt with a lot of this stuff. You know, I talked about, you know, a couple of days ago about just how long it took for the FBI and the DOJ and for these wheels to move. It was almost like they really didn't want to do any of this stuff. They gave him all the time. They gave him all the opportunities. It's like he wanted this. I mean, there's part of me that goes, his lawyers had to know this was eventually coming, had to know that the DOJ didn't want to do this. It's like he wanted this fight, that he wants this martyr, this victim card to go back to that base who doesn't care what he's being charged with, just that he's a martyr. So I think there's part of me that goes, he wants this.
He watched too much Succession. He thinks he's Logan Roy. Okay. He is not Logan Roy. He is at best Kendall Roy. And it's sad. It's sad to watch. Actually, he's Connor Roy. It is a sad. He's a sad man. And yeah, I think he did want it. I think he thought that, you know, that would be, you know, the fight that he could win publicly. Meanwhile, there are other charges brewing, whether it be January 6th or whether it be his perfect phone call in Georgia, those indictments are coming too. And I think they're worse than this. And he's, you know, clearly in my book, guilty of everything he's been charged with here. And he could talk about the Presidential Records Act all he wants. I'm going to talk about the Espionage Act, which he's charged with. And, you know, the Espionage Act basically gets around his I declassified it with my mind thing, which I don't even think is a defense at this point.
No, right? No, look, on the tape he admitted it. He doesn't have the ability to do any of this.
Right. It's not even really an issue, but they're like, all right, we'll take it off the table. We'll charge you with the Espionage Act. Sounds worse to me than the Presidential Records Act, and it is worse. And at the end of the day, again, no respect for the men and women in uniform who gather this intelligence, who put together this report, who risk their lives for little pay, little recognition, because they believe in this country and what we stand for. And this man pays no regard to it. And there's 30% of this country who still want him in the White House. It drives me crazy. And to think about it and to have the conversations with some of them on it, you know, and I talk to a lot of them. I mean, I'm a conservative media. I not anymore. Now I'm on News Nation, but you know, I spent 13 years at Fox, and you know, a lot of people that recognize me. In fact, 90% of the people who recognize me from there, and I have conversations with them about why they like this guy, and I think they feel that nobody has ever paid attention to them before, and I think that's just sad because people have. They just probably weren't paying attention to them because they weren't as entertaining as this guy is.
That speaks volumes. The last question I've got for you. McCarthy's talking about possible expungement of impeachment. Is it possible to expunge an impeachment?
No. Show me in the Constitution where that happens. No. You know, do whatever you want. You know, do whatever you want, Kevin, in the, you know, 18 months or so you got left as Speaker of the House. Enjoy it. Enjoy the office. I don't think you're going to be minority leader either when you lose the House. But, you know, I know that, you know, you get a little bit bigger balcony as the speaker than as the leader. So I hope you enjoyed it. You made it to where you were as far as you were going to go, and it's over. You're done. One, you won't get reelected speaker. Two, you won't win the majority. And three, you basically sold your soul for a slightly bigger office. Slightly bigger. He's a pathetic human being.
So tell me what you really think.
Yeah, I of all the people, you know, look, and again, I tipped my hat to him last month for the deal, the debt ceiling deal. He made that happen. He was it was good work on his part, and I have to give credit where credit is due. But this, like, now he's got to do everything these idiots want him to do. Now he's got to expunge an impeachment, which, by the way, are you going to expunge both of them? Are you going to expunge the one where he sent the mob to kill you, Kevin? He was going to kill you, too. right? The mob didn't know who you were. The mob was just going to kill anybody they got their hands on, and you were lucky they didn't. And you went to the floor of the house, and you told the truth after that moment.
Yeah.
You told the truth in a very effective way. And we have video recordings of that. So you're going to just say that was just a lie too, what you said after January 6th?
Yep,
are you going to expunge that impeachment, or are you just going to expunge the Ukraine one? You know, where he basically was asking a foreign leader to dig up dirt on his political opponent. It is, you know, just stop. Just leave office. If this is who you are, do what John Boehner did. I can't deal with these people anymore. I'm going to go sell weed and make some money.
Go sell weed.
Sell weed, Kevin. You'll be happier and you'll be richer and you won't have to deal with these idiots anymore.
There you go. Chris, I appreciate the time. As always, entertaining talking with you. I appreciate the time.
I always love coming here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, our good friend, Christopher Hahn. Make sure you check out his website, ChristopherHahn.com, and the podcast, The Aggressive Progressive Podcast. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Kevin McCarthy said he's not sure that Trump's the strongest Republican candidate. He says, you know, can he win? Yeah, sure he can win. Yeah, he can win. The question is he the strongest to win an election? He said, I don't know that answer. And which is weird because he's doing everything he can possibly do to make the... How did Liz Cheney put it? We're electing morons? We're electing idiots. That's what she said. He's doing everything he can do to pander to the idiots. And trust me, the idiots are running the asylum. The fact that they're talking about trying to expunge an impeachment, I don't know how you do that. I don't know. I don't know how you go back and undo all that. But, you know, hey, we'll see. We'll see what they come up with. Now, the thing that gets me is I look at where we're heading and the fact that Trump is leading in every way, shape, and form. It's interesting to me that you have the red hats who saying it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter what information is there. It doesn't matter. He's our guy. And never shall we change. I mean, it's really quite remarkable when you stop and think about it. And this is where the moment that we're in makes me say that we've got to be talking to more and more people and get them getting that perfect phone call. I mean, the tape that just came out, I don't know how you listen to either one of those. I don't know how you allow those things to go unnoticed. If there is a phone call with Biden that is that clear, can you imagine how the right would lose their mind? I listened to a little bit of right-wing talk radio today, and they were doing backflips, mental gymnastics, trying to justify what was on that tape. Oh, it's not a big deal. Everything they can do to ensure that Dear Leader is covered. And at some point as a country, don't we have to go wrong is wrong and hold this person accountable? And again, I go back to his Truth Social post today. This kind of threat, this kind of, someone needs to talk to Jack Smith, his family and his friends. That's not even dog whistle. That's saying, hey, dim. Hey, poorly educated. Hey, lunatic. Hey, fringe. Go harass that guy. Go get his family. Go get his children. And this guy wants to be president? And there are people who think that that behavior is... I was waiting for Van Jones. You know, where's Van Jones when we need him? To say, oh, now he's presidential. This is not somebody who belongs... This is not someone who should be on a White House tour, let alone living in the White House and in the Oval Office. This is someone who shouldn't even be near the Capitol. But yeah, expungement. If anyone's got a thought, I want to hear it. If there's a way that you think that you can expunge an impeachment, I am all ears. I know that there are a lot of think tanks out there. I know there's a lot of right-wing money out there paying people to dream up bad ideas and bad policy and idiocy. I got to hear the justification for, yeah, we're going to go back and undo the impeachment. Got to hear it. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1880. That was the day that Helen Keller was born in Tuscumbia, Alabama. 2 years later, she lost both her sight and hearing due to an illness. With the help of a teacher by the name of Ann Sullivan, Helen learned how to communicate again. Her inspiring story was retold in the play and movie, The Miracle Workers. Keller spent the rest of her life advocating for people with disabilities, as well as a woman's right to vote and a woman's right to birth control. But did you know she was also an outspoken supporter of the cause of labor? Helen was a socialist and a member of the Industrial Workers of the World Union. In 1912, Helen sent a check to support textile workers on strike in Little Falls, New York. She accompanied the check with a letter that captured her commitment to the labor movement. She wrote of the women out on strike, quote, "Their cause is my cause. If they are denied a living wage, I also am denied. While they are industrial slaves, I cannot be free. My hunger is not satisfied while they are unfed. I cannot enjoy the good things of life which have come to me if they are hindered and neglected. I want all the workers of the world to have sufficient money to provide the normal standard of living, a decent home, healthful surroundings, opportunity for education and recreation. I want them all to have the same blessings I have. I, deaf and blind, have been helped to overcome many obstacles. I want them to be helped generously in a struggle which resembles my own in many ways." Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
When you think of Americans whose music has made a lasting difference, you might think of Scott Joplin, Woody Guthrie, Maybelle Carter, Harry Belafonte, or Roger Payne. Who? I came across Payne in a June obituary reporting that he had died at age 88. Yes, I occasionally scan the obits, not out of morbid curiosity, but because these little death notices encompass our people's history, reconnecting us to common lies that had some small or surprisingly large impact. Payne's impact is still reverberating around the globe, even though few know his name. A biologist who studied moths in the 1960s, he chanced upon a technical military recording of undersea sounds that incidentally included a cacophony of baying, shrieking, mooing, squealing, and caterwauling. They were the voices of humpback whales. What others had considered noise blew my mind, said Payne, describing them as a musical chorus of exuberant, uninterrupted rivers of sound. His life's work shifted from moths to whales, then to the interdependence of all species. At the time, whales were treated by industry and governments as dull, lumbering nuisances. But Payne's musical instincts came into play, sensing that the singing of these magnificent mammals might reach the primordial soul of humans. So he collected their rhythmic, haunting melodies into a momentous 1970 recording titled Songs of a Humpback Whale. It became a huge bestseller, altered public perception, and spawned a global Save the Whales campaign, one of the most successful conservation movements ever. This is Jim Hightower saying, so without writing or performing a single musical note, this scientist produced a truly powerful serenade from nature that continues to make a difference. To connect with Roger Payne's musical work and help extend his deep understanding that all of us beings are related, contact Ocean Alliance at whale.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, some good news coming out of the Pennsylvania State House. They recently passed a minimum wage increase, 103 to 100. Actually got a couple of Republicans to come over and say, yeah, maybe working people do need an increase in their wages. The minimum wage will go up to $15 an hour in 2026. As I understand, this is going to peg to inflation, so we won't have a decade plus of the minimum wage being eroded by inflation. Also, the tipped minimum wage going to be 60% of the minimum wage, also to be pegged to inflation. This is important, and it passed the House. Good thing. Now, is it going to get through the Senate? I'm here to share some thoughts on if it's possible to get this bill through the Pennsylvania State Senate. I've asked Pennsylvania State Senator Art Haywood to come give us some thoughts. Art, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for allowing me on. Yeah, we got a tremendous opportunity to raise the wage in Pennsylvania based upon what the House has passed.
And what do you think the chances of that are going to be, given the fact that Republicans overwhelmingly control the state Senate?
So it is an uphill battle, but a couple of things are in our favor. Number one, State Senator Dan Laughlin, Republican from Erie, has proposed a similar bill, not exactly the same, but similar, getting it to 15. So I think that's good news for us. The second piece of good news is that we have 2-1 those who want to see it. We've got the governor who wants to see it go up. We've got the House who wants to see it go up, and those are advantages. Now, there are negotiations ongoing now, and as a result of those negotiations, there's no outcome yet. One thing I will say that I see is a challenge around the Commonwealth that, let me describe it as follows. So we know that Pennsylvania is the last in the nation in terms of the wage rate. We know we're surrounded by states with a higher wage. It's up to 14 in New Jersey, getting ready to hit 15, same in New York. On the other hand, West Virginia's at 8.75, Ohio's at 10.10. And so those in the West are looking to Ohio and West Virginia for a standard. Those in the East are looking for New Jersey and New York. So we've got a big tension here. That I hope we can favorably resolve.
Now, once the House passed this increase, and look, I'm 100% behind it, immediately all the naysayer groups, the Commonwealth Foundations and the Employment Opportunity Groups and all of them were immediately out saying, this is going to cost us jobs, Art. We're going to lose thousands of jobs. It's going to be those tip jobs, those restaurant jobs, those service. They're going to all be gone, Art. It's going to be the end of public sector work.
Yeah, we hear these myths over and over again, and what I tell people to do is, first of all, just look to New Jersey, just look to New York. These are all states that are going to 14 an hour. These are all states where there's no reports of jobs lost, folks are not getting paid anymore. And so while there's all these theories about what might happen, there is a reality of what happened. And that is in New York, that is in New Jersey, all the states that surround us. There's no job losses being reported. I will share one other thing. Raising the minimum wage is really good for businesses. And it's primarily so because low-paid workers will get the money and typically spend it in the neighborhood where they live and work. I say to people, business owners, would you rather have someone come to your store with $100 to spend or $200 to spend? all business owners said they would rather have people with $200. So doubling the minimum wage will create exactly that result, doubling the amount of money that consumers have to spend, and that is really good for business.
But, you know, again, it comes back down to this idea, which side are you on? Are you on the side of the people who work for a living, or the side of the corporate interests it's all about putting more profit into their pockets? But we hear all the time that this caring for the small business owner, we care about, you know, the mom and pops. You know, can you speak a little bit to this? Because, you know, look, I look at a lot of the low-wage jobs. These are big corporations. These are people who are, you know, the fast food industry. You see a lot of the wages being suppressed. Can you speak a little bit to what this would do to the mom and pops in your view?
Sure. And I also want to share that often the big businesses try to hide behind the very small businesses and pretend that they are going to have the same level of suffering or challenges as small business. And we know that's not the case for any of these national, multinational companies. They can afford it. Second thing is, across Pennsylvania, wages have been going up for small, medium, and large businesses. This is because of the competition. And so now some businesses are paying $16, $17 an hour. And unfortunately, though, some individuals have been left behind, which is exactly why we got to raise the minimum wage. Let me go straight to the point of the mom and pop. So small businesses in New Jersey, mom and pops in New Jersey, surviving. Mom and pops in New York, surviving. Mom and pops in Ohio, surviving. So all of these small businesses that are rightly concerned about this change can look to where the wage has raised and see the experience. And more money that people have to spend, this is an easy equation. The more people that have to spend, the better it is for small businesses, mom and pops, big business, middle-sized businesses. So the increased income from sales should have a big benefit. The second big benefit that we often repeat is turnover. And small businesses, mom-and-pop businesses, often have a lot of turnover because of the wages that they're paying. What has been consistently found is that a higher minimum wage helps to reduce turnover. And turnover is a cost to all businesses, big and small.
It sounds like there are a lot of really good reasons to raise the minimum wage. But all I keep getting from my friends on the other side is the fear. We're going to lose jobs. And can you talk a little bit to the studies that may have been done in places like, Seattle, where they have raised the minimum wage, and what effect that had on? Because it's my understanding that when you raise the minimum wage, there's actually a slight increase in the number of jobs that are produced, instead of the doomsday that's been thrown around that we're going to lose a quarter of all restaurant jobs because of this. Can you share a little bit on that?
Yeah, no, there have been a number of studies, and Seattle is one of the places which has been studied a lot because they went to $15 more quickly than any other place. And what was discovered from the Seattle study is, A, there was no job loss. B, there was some job gain. This job gain is very fundamental. The more money people have to spend, the better it is for the economy, the more the economy grows because there's more sales. And that is the most fundamental economic approach that is out there. People spend money. You have to produce more to respond to demand of what people are buying. And that grows the economy, grows jobs.
Yep.
So that's the most simple explanation I can give the people.
Sounds like common sense.
In terms of why it happens.
No, I mean, it sounds like common sense. I mean, the reality is the more money working people have in their pockets, the more they're going to spend, and the more that business is going to work to get that money. It seems like a positive direction. It seems like, you know, a growing economy, as opposed to we're going to restrain how much money people have in their pockets and you know, make them struggle and suffer and not be able to afford the things they need. It just seems like common sense.
Yeah, it's most often that's right, Rick. It's most often called the virtuous circle, which is the more money individuals, working people have to have, then it pumps more money into the economy. And that is the virtuous circle that we get when we make sure everyday people have a decent standard of living. That's on which the economy is based.
There you go. I hope folks will in Pennsylvania, in our Pennsylvania audience, reach out to your state senator, say we need to get this done. We need to get it done soon. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Pennsylvania State Senator Art Haywood. You know, Art, I saw the House has passed a couple other pieces of legislation I wanted to get your thoughts on.
Yes.
Because, you know, in this country, medical debt is a huge thing. In fact, you know, someone sent me a graph of, you know, the number of people who have to file bankruptcy every year because of medical debt, and it was some obscene number, like, you know, 700,000 people a year. Whereas in other countries, you know, like Britain, France, Japan, Germany, nobody files because of medical debt because they have a national healthcare system. I understand our House has passed something that would help prevent and help provide relief from people with medical debt. I'm curious your thoughts, if you have any thoughts on House Bill 78.
Yeah, I think it's the right direction in which to head. The Affordable Care Act from Obamacare was also in response to the high level of bankruptcies that individuals are having to endure because of medical debt and medical bills. So this is going, in my opinion, it's going in exactly the right direction to relieve individuals from some of these high costs from hospitals and physician care. Now, I will say in terms of prospects in the Senate, I think that's going to be a little more challenging, at least to get it done quickly, because we haven't had really any hearings on it or a whole lot of discussion on it. So it may take the Senate more time to get comfortable with this kind of relief. But as this is the right direction. This is a kind of reasonable relief that people deserve.
No, I'm there. And this is one of the reasons I bring this up, because I know this is going to be a heavy lift to get past the Senate. Just like I know that the House Bill 1050 to keep preventative care free in healthcare plans here in Pennsylvania, probably going to be a heavy lift in the Senate. I think these are important campaign issues. I think these are important issues to bring to people and say, look, which side are you on? And then which side are your elected officials on? Because, you know, for too long, we've been letting people off the hook. You know, families are struggling. Families are having a hard time with health care, with education. You go through the struggles. And I think we have to show which side people are on.
Yeah, and I think that is exactly what the House Democrats are doing, and we will do as well. They are demonstrating consistently that they are on the side of everyday people, on the side of everyday people with respect to pay, on the side of everyday people with respect to health care bills. They also passed legislation I started in the Senate to increase the ability of people to save for retirement with automatic payroll deductions. These are all bills directly related to improving the everyday life of Pennsylvanians. And there is a tremendous contrast because the Senate does not yet appear to be willing to do so. Now, I say not yet because we're not done, but if the Senate doesn't align with these important initiatives, we will know where they stand.
Yep. Last question I've got for you. You being from the Philly area, pretty incredible work done on the I-95 bridge. I got to give Governor Shapiro an enormous amount of credit. I thought someone finally did what I've been calling for and start taking credit for stuff. I love the live cam. In fact, we've used it on the show a number of times. But can you talk a little bit about what it took to get that done and with that moving?
It was amazing. And Rick, I watched the live cam as well some evening. So I give tremendous credit to the leadership of Governor Shapiro to create the direction, create the demand, and get everybody organized in the same direction and do it quickly. I also want to really put a shout out to the union workers in the building trades who were the ones to execute it, to get the work done. Without the building trades, it would not have been done so quickly. You needed those individuals to be willing to work 24/7. That's also what it took. But I give Governor Shapiro a tremendous amount of credit to get that temporary road up. It is used for Philadelphia, but not just Philadelphia. The whole Northeast Corridor, trucks were being delayed, deliveries were being delayed. And so it's very important for our overall economy to get that road up again. And You really got to give him a lot of credit. I said to my wife, John Shapiro is now America's governor, having gotten I-95 back on track so quickly.
No. It show, what this shows me, and again, you know, I've been talking about this, you know, since the reopening. It shows that we can do big things. When we take off the red hat and the blue hat and we get a hard hat on, we can accomplish good things. And this just shows that when we put, you know, some of this nonsense aside, we can do good things.
I think it will help us raise our aspirations in terms of what we can be in the Commonwealth, what we can be as a nation, and who we can really be. And raising our aspirations, I think, will go a long way in dealing with the prior conversation you had about the status of the former president. Once we can really see that we can be much better than what some of this leadership is selling us, then I think that can help us get beyond those who are trying to drag all of us into the gutter.
I'm right there with you. Senator Haywood, I appreciate your time. Keep up the great work in the Senate, and let's get that minimum wage done. I hope folks will reach out to your office and to others to push in the right direction. If you want to see the minimum wage increased, call your state senator in Pennsylvania and tell them, hey, we need to do this. But, Art, I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Rick, and thanks for your encouragement.
Good stuff, our good friend Art Haywood. Look, at the end of the day, you want something done, call these people early, call them often, and tell them it's time. Now, do it. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1993. That was the day that A.E. Staley locked out 763 workers at their corn processing plant in Decatur, Illinois. Labor-management relations grew increasingly hostile with foreign-owned Tate Lyle's decision to bring in new managers. The new management ordered workers to disregard safety regulations. An OSHA investigation found an astonishing 298 violations at the plant, triggering more than $1.5 million in fines. Despite the fines, worker safety concerns persisted. Management proposed a new contract designed to destroy grievance rights, seniority, and worker safety. Even worse, workers would be required to work 12-hour shifts. They would have to be available both night and day shifts at management's whim. 96% of the workers voted to reject the contract. In response, the company locked the workers out of the plant. The locked out workers were replaced with scabs. As the lockout wore on month after month, and in the face of the employer's refusal to negotiate, the workers had to rely on one another to stay strong. They went door to door throughout Decatur to inform the public about what was happening. In 1994 and 1995, the workers were joined on the picket lines by United Auto workers from the city's Caterpillar plant and rubber workers from Bridgestone Firestone. Those workers had gone out on strike as their employers took extreme hardline bargaining positions, earning Decatur the nickname of Strike City. The eyes of the nation were on Central Illinois. It seemed that the Decatur struggle was the stage for the modern labor movement. Workers were fighting back in the age of international mergers and all-out attacks on union workers. 3 days before Christmas in 1995, however, the National Union settled the strike, leaving many of the workers angry with the settlement that took their voice away. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something in your mind, email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Rick Scott, Skeletor, Florida senator, evidently doesn't want socialists or communists coming to Florida. He warned that socialists and communists not to travel to Florida. They're not welcome. Okay. How about people who steal from Medicare? Yeah, how about people who... how about them? Oh, yeah, that's you. Never mind. Speaking of Florida, a woman who really was, you know, guilty on the face, because she was one of the January 6th people. On social media, she put out, "We breached the Capitol, OMG." Said insurrection is coming. Hold the line. Stay vigilant. Storming the Capitol to take back our country from traitors. She put all this stuff on social media. Now, remember, on the 6th, when all this happened, I remember going on air saying it's going to be interesting to watch all these people who are going to have to go to trial with all of the treason that they recorded. Because these are people who for weeks, days, months were talking about this stuff, and were very proud of their treason, and promoted the fact, like on Parler and other right wing sites. She pled guilty to what she was already guilty of, a felony charge of civil disorder. We'll see what she gets. I'm sure it's not going to be really long because she only spent, I guess, like 10 minutes in the Capitol. But the fact that she went in with the idea that this is an insurrection, it's the mindset that, yes, we're invading the Capitol. And as I said from the beginning, all of those people knew why they were there. Everyone who went to Washington, D.C. on that day went for the express purpose of stopping the certification of the election. It was in the title. It was stop the steal. They believed that they had been cheated. They believed what Trump had told them, that everything was rigged. They bought it. They went believing that they were patriots and they were going to water that tree of liberty with the blood of tyrants and patriots. And their mindset was, we're going to stop the election. We're going to stop the certification of this election, even if it means hanging Mike Pence, to which someone did actually build a gallows. You cannot now say, well, we were just walking through the ropes and it was like an ordinary. Nope. For me, you went there with the intent. And this is what happens to traitors. This is what happens. You went there knowing what you were doing. You bought all in. You thought your guy was going to be behind you and your guy screwed you. And the thing that gets me and just mind blowing is that they're going through all this stuff and their guy has done virtually nothing for them. It's quite remarkable. Speaking of the guy, you may remember a guy named Stephen Miller, Trump's top immigration advisor. Well, the big story today that came out is evidently Stephen Miller, who some have akin to Goebbels or some of the Nazi elite. I'm not going there. But, I got to be honest. The fact that he was... It's being reported that he wanted to, I don't know how you do this. I actually don't. But evidently he was pushing Trump to attack the migrants coming into the country using drones. Literally, using drones. And he wanted to blow up boats full of unarmed civilians who were coming with predator drones. And these, again, these are the very best people. Remember, Trump is only going to surround himself with the very best people. So this idea that, there's a ship of migrants coming towards the U.S., bomb them. If that comes into your head, if that's a thought, you're a horrible person. There's just no other way of putting that. Look, if you say, we'll capture them, we'll put them on a boat and send them back, put them on a plane and send them back. You can think that, but bomb them? Let them drown in the ocean at your hand? I mean, it's bad enough if the boat sinks and you do nothing to help them. That's horrible as well. But the idea that actively gonna bomb them? And it's one of those stories that I read and I'm going, I'm actually not surprised. I'm actually not shocked anymore. And that's one of the things that I guess I'm attempting to deal with, that my level of shock is way out of whack. My level of expectations of others and their humanity is kind of out of whack. And I got to deal with that because there are people. And as I say about my Republican friends,
who want to do this kind of stuff, the cruelty really is the point. You know, they believe that their immigration policy should be, you know, if we bomb one of them, nobody else will come. We'll send that message. And they justify it in their head. Yeah, we'll take out a couple hundred of them and we'll let them all drown and we'll record it and we'll put it out as a warning to others. Yeah, that's that. And the weird thing is, and I come back to the cruelty being the point, that